walks around town. We took her to the ice cream shop in the afternoon, after the playground, where Brad sat with me and talked about his childhood and his family.
"I can't believe how smart she is," he said of his daughter as she climbed the play structure. "She's reading. And stop telling me it's normal."
"It's normal," I said. "Between 5 and 8. He took me by the chin.
"She's exceptional."
"She is, but her reading level's in the normal range." When he held my chin like that, I melted into a hot puddle. He was so close to kissing me, brushing his thumb along my jaw, his face softening a little bit. I didn't know when he'd stopped being a star to me, when I stopped seeing his real face and his movie-slash-billboard-slash-magazine face at the same time. But he was more gorgeous without the mental backdrop of celebrity. "No touching in front of the little one," I said softly. "Later, you can finish that thought."
"I'll finish that in a few more."
He dropped his hand. The past few days had been perfect, and I knew it was because I'd allowed them to be. I let Brad be Brad, and I let myself drop any pretense that I was upholding a standard of behavior. He didn't treat me like a nanny, and I didn't act like one. I just let it go. Maybe being outside Los Angeles made it easier. Maybe it was his determination that whatever we had wasn't a fling. Maybe he just wore me down. But I didn't pretend I didn't have feelings for him. I didn't get suddenly stupid or unrealistic. I knew we had to go back. I knew people were going to talk, and my job prospects were about to shrink to the size of a studio executive's attention span. Late at night, after he took me in the garage night after night, lying in the bed next to that beautiful little girl, I worried so much I shook. My heart skipped and twisted, and the pain in my chest seemed unbearable. I couldn't breathe. I didn't want to go back home, and I couldn't stay. How many more days would this last? How long before I was in the cold with no job, no Brad, and no Nicole? I'd done everything I could to avoid this happening, and here I was, in Arkansas, falling in love with a celebrity daddy and his daughter. Late at night, with the crickets and the breeze outside, and Nicole's breathing next to me, I panicked. But in the morning, whether I'd slept or not, I felt at peace. I was living a lie, but it was my lie, and if I didn't live it, who would? I dressed Nicole and brought her downstairs. I let myself be affectionate with her. I smiled at Brad with the fullness of our shared secrets. I lived the way I wanted to live, realizing finally that even when all this ended, I'd learned something. I learned what I wanted. I wanted a home, a family, and a man to call my own. And when I was with him, I could pretend that life was with Brad Sinclair, not the movie star, but the man. The only boundary I maintained was with Nicole. She couldn't see the physical affection. We needed plausible deniability to protect her from hurt. "As long as we have her back for school, I have no objection." I stroked his face in the garage. He'd set blankets out over the desk and fucked me on it in the dark. We'd taken the questions of our relationship in small bites, hammering out a plan in pieces.
"I may be in Thailand a month after you leave."
"You won't. It's monsoon season. 2 weeks tops." I held up 2 fingers and he kissed them. "If we make it that far."
"We will."
"When we come to that bridge." "I can't even say it."
"I'm going to call you my girlfriend. You're going to find another job if you want. You're going to see Nicole every night when you come over. Everything's going to be normal."
"You're a real optimist."
"Only when I'm with you."
Chapter 59, Brad. I'm dyslexic. Seriously dyslexic. It would be funny if you could see what I saw, but you'd never laugh. I'm sorry I never told you, but outside my family, no one knows but Paula and Mike. I wasn't ready, and now I am. Because I love you. And I hid your phone because I was trying to keep something else from you. You can hate me for this shit, but I love you, and I'm not letting you go. Everything sounded ridiculous and hammy. I play the admissions over and over, trying to make myself look good, then look bad, then more honest and self-effacing. In the end, I was just going to say what needed saying, and I'd see how she reacted. But Paula, she was a loose end. I had to put some ointment on that. She'd been good to me for a lot of years, and yeah, she'd had ideas about me, and said things that weren't particularly true, but I wouldn't hold them against her. With Kara, Nicole, and Susan's youngest in the front yard blowing soap bubbles, I texted Paula from the porch, speaking softly but clearly into my voice dictation app. Are you all right?
You led me on a lot of years.
Led her on? Not even a little. I didn't touch her, didn't wink at her, didn't do anything. I put a lot of effort into not saying a single sexy thing or flirting even a little because I needed her to work for me. And here she was turning that into the exact opposite. You know that's not true. I am not a stupid woman. I know how to read you. This was ridiculous. I called her from the front yard. She picked up on the first ring. Paula, what's happening? You've gone off the rails.
I've decided to tell you something, Bradley. I don't care about anything right now but telling you this.
I was sure I didn't want to hear it, and I was sure I had no choice but to listen. All right.
I've been with you for years, since everyone learned their letters in first grade and you just didn't. No one knows you like I do. All those people in the business, like you call it, they don't know who they're talking to. I do. And all that time ago when we split up, I let it happen because I thought you needed time to sow your oats. Now I think you've sown enough. I think it's time for you to just settle down.
And there it was, on the line, person to person. Shit and butter-covered biscuit. I was not prepared for this at all. No, I said. I love you, Paula, but not that way. You're loyal and steady. I respect you. But I don't feel what you want me to feel. I'm sorry. I wanted to crawl into a hole like a little brown gopher, just disappear into the dirt. I didn't want to hurt her. She didn't deserve to be humiliated. I stayed on the phone for what felt like the longest pause in the history of awkward pauses, and I just prayed Nicole would be amused by the bubble long enough not to interrupt that horrible pause. Paula?
I stayed by you, she answered.
I know.
I was waiting for you to wake up, grow up, all that time. All the things you did.
What did I do?
I smiled through all of it.
Paula, what is it you think I did? I heard her take a deep breath and I didn't interrupt.
We were on a plane to Dublin to shoot Everly, she said.
Sure, the Delta flight. What's the...
No, she cut me off. The one after. The first time you flew first class and you were a smiling fucking rube when they gave you a hot towel. The flight attendant performed oral sex on you in the galley.
Right. I was that guy. I was the guy who thought he needed to rack up conquests and movies. I hadn't been the guy in Redfield watching my daughter and my girlfriend. Could I call her that? Blow soap bubbles with my nieces and nephews. I don't remember what you're talking about, I said, watching Nicole jump for a huge bubble and miss.
I do, Paula said. You barely paid attention, which was exactly what Ken wanted. You were looking at her bottom, and I gave you the letter. I told you to read it, but I knew you barely try, like always.
Her voice was a soup of rage and hurt. I'd ripped the rug of her life right out from under her. She was already off balance from Nicole, and I'd been a shitty friend.
What did it say? I told you to read it, and you pushed it at me and said, "Can you just tell me what it says?" So I did. I read it to you, and I told you to sign off on what Ken said was best, and you did. You signed where I told you to, and you went right off to get the stewardess to be disgusting in the bathroom.
What did it say?
I told you exactly what it said.
Tell me again.
Chapter 60. Kara. Brad worked every day. He locked himself in the office/sewing room and worked on his script. I'd nannied for plenty of actors. I'd never seen one work that hard. The hours he put into preparation were far and away the most intense. Susan came around a lot. She lived around the corner, and her mother babysat most days. The street was like an extended Sinclair campus. I was sitting on the porch playing a matching card game with Nicole when a delivery truck pulled up.
Hey,
the guy said, carrying a box under his arm. Hi, I stood up.
You must be the girl Brad's been taking around.
He had dark skin and a crisp white smile. 6'2", rippling muscles. In Los Angeles, he'd be an actor or a model. I think you're talking about Nicole.
Her too.
He smiled at the girl and handed me the clipboard.
How are you, Nicole?
Good. She looked up from the memory game long enough to say, I like your head. He laughed and put his hand on his bald skull.
Thank you.
I signed for the package, and we traded the box and the clipboard, saying our goodbyes. I looked at the label as I walked into the house. It was for me. I didn't expect that. The return address was Westside Nannies, but no name. Also strange.
What did he bring us?
Brad's dad asked when I got to the kitchen. It's for me, apparently. He pulled out a knife, wielding it with three fingers.
Let's see.
He slashed the tape, popping the box open. I looked in. Books. Dealing with dyslexia. The dyslexic adult. I found a white letter-size envelope and opened it. Kara, I'm sure Brad has told you about his problem. Now that I'm no longer his assistant, it's important that someone take over helping him memorize his lines. These books will help you learn how. I hope you're happy with him. Good luck. Paula Blount. His problem? I should have seen that coming a mile away. The way he was so happy Nicole could read without trouble. The way he never read anything in front of anyone. The slow, rote memorization of the script. Paula taking care of everything. More papers inside. Marked scripts. Flashcards with phonetic spellings. Paula, I said to myself, identifying the sender to his parents. Brad's dyslexic? They exchanged glances.
He didn't tell you?
His mother asked, incredulous. I didn't have a moment to answer. Brad walked in wearing a t-shirt stretched over his perfect chest and jeans that made me want to get him naked. My brain spun off its axis for a second. If I'd been thinking straight, I would have said something about the books right away, told him it didn't matter, or hid them. But all I could do was stand there holding Phonetics for Dyslexics, staring at him, because he was beautiful, and that was the book I had in my hand at the moment. He saw me, the books all over the counter, his parents looking meek, and walked out.
Chapter 61, Brad. 5 minutes after Paula hung up, 6 minutes after she told me what was in the letter I signed, I was back at it. Trying to work, because that was all that kept me sane, but my concentration was shot. I just figured out how to tell Kara I was dyslexic, only to find out that was a teeny tiny little fib in the face of the incident on the plane Paula had just reminded me about. Shit. I was just walking to the kitchen for a Coke, trying to decide whether to hide it from Kara or just spit it out. Wondering if Paula could be bought off with money or compliments. I didn't have the testicular fortitude for bribery or flattery, but I didn't have any other options. I never got that Coke. When I got to the kitchen, my dad had this shrug on. My mother was kind of shaking her head. And the one who mattered? The one who hated lies? She was just staring at me, holding up a book. I didn't know what to make of her expression. Ken, my personal PR pithmaker? He had an expression for information that got out. The toothpaste was out of the tube. Was I supposed to apologize? What did someone do right out of the gate? Was I supposed to defend myself? Tell her I hadn't gotten around to mentioning it? I didn't care what anyone thought of me, but I cared what she thought. If you don't care what people think, why didn't you tell them you were dyslexic? Flooded. I was flooded with my own contradictions and needs. Kara put the book down, and I knew whatever was going to happen now. I was going to have to answer for my ambition. I was going to have to tell Kara everything my drive had done to her, to me, to us, to Nicole. And I wasn't ready. Nope. Because Paula had just told me the one lie I'd forgotten I'd told. The big one. I hadn't even had to hide it because I'd zipped it, locked it, and tossed it out the window, never to be recalled. Now what?
Now that I loved Kara and I wanted to find a way to make her part of my life. Now that I'd figured out how to tell her the first big lie, a second presented itself just as she figured out what a liar I was. This party boy needed a drink.
Chapter 62. Kara. Nicole licked her ice cream bowl and handed it to her grandmother.
It's clean now. You don't need to put it in the dishwasher.
She had chocolate streaks across her cheeks, on the bridge of her nose, and under her chin. She was as funny and cute as ever, but 2 hours after Brad left the room, I was uncharmed. I wiped her face as she tried to wiggle away.
Ow! Hey, I don't like that!
No 5-year-old likes getting their face wiped. I put the paper towel down, and Nicole gave me the stubborn child look of death.
I do not like it.
Well, Grandma said, why don't you show Miss Kara how to do it? She handed the paper towel back to Nicole.
Come here,
she demanded, waving me to her level. I resigned, leaning down. Nicole gently wiped my face, patting so lightly she wouldn't have gotten a speck of ice cream off me if I'd decided to lick the bowl.
You're upset, Irma said.
She was right. I was distracted and unhappy. I must have broadcast it with every gesture and word. I felt as if I was dangling. I didn't have a phone, so I couldn't call him, and calls from his parents had gone unanswered. I just wanted to talk to him, nothing more.
I don't know why he thinks it would matter to me.
She put Nicole's ice cream bowl in the dishwasher while she wasn't looking. When he first moved out there, he had a lot of people telling him what to do. People who wanted to help him. And things happened so fast for him, he couldn't get his feet under him, so he listened to them. She wiped the counter pensively. One of the things they told him was that if people knew it took him so long to read, they wouldn't hire him. He didn't go all the way out there to not get work. She pointed to my face and said to Nicole, "You missed a spot, sweetheart."
Thank you, Grandma.
Nicole wiped a spot on my forehead and put the towel down.
See? That's how you're supposed to do it.
I want to tell him it's all right.
He's probably down at Buddy's,
Melton grumbled, walking in from the living room. With his phone to his ear, he shouted a second later,
Yeah, Buddy, it's... Yes, I'm fine. Is my son in there? When? All right, thank you.
He clicked off.
Left an hour ago.
What followed was a good half hour of calls, shouts, a few segues into gossip as Irma and Milton Sinclair tried to track down their son. Calls came in, calls went out. Susan came in with suggestions and made more calls. Brad had been to Buddy's, peeled off with a couple of high school friends, bought dinner for everyone at Jack's Chicken and Fries, hung out in the parking lot of the Chevron convenience store drinking beer with his friends before Deputy Froman had gotten his autograph and told them to move on. Apparently, he went back to Buddy's and put Teresa Crump on the Harley because she was too drunk to make it out of the lot, much less 3 miles to Hensley. And that was the last we heard from him. Teresa Crump didn't answer her phone. Brad didn't answer his. I wasn't worried about Teresa Crump, though I felt sympathy for her hangover. I wasn't worried Brad's dick was going to find its way into her. I should have been, but I wasn't. I was worried that he was running around town because he thought I was angry at him. I was worried he was partying to cover up some grand hurt I'd exposed.
He's there? Susan shouted into the phone. Tell him not to move. Keep him. Tie him down.
She put the phone away from her face and mouthed, M and P to her mother.
Find out who he's with, Milton said.
Sherry, hang on.
She put her hand over the bottom of the phone.
No one. He's getting a bottle of water, talking to Winch Welton. So he's on his way back.
Irma threw her hands up as if it was decided. He can sure make us crazy, and we love him, she pointed to me.
But he owes you an apology.
If he was coming back, he'd get water here, I said to myself, but loud enough for everyone to hear. Teresa Crump's home. She can get her own water. He's going somewhere without a sink, and he's staying there. Where had we been in these few days? More importantly, where had we not been? Who had he avoided?
Can she get him to stay there? I asked Susan.
She rolled her eyes and took her hand off the mic.
Sherry, is he still there?
She nodded to me.
All right. Tell Winch to keep talking. It's his field of expertise.
I know, honey.
See you.
Milton tossed me the keys to the Buick.
You know how to get to the M&P? Left out the driveway. Two lights. Right on Wolf. Can't miss it.
Thank you.
Chapter 63. Kara. I didn't think I'd make it to the M&P supermarket in time to catch him, but I went anyway. A flyer was stuck between the doors. When they whooshed open for me, they released the paper. I grabbed it. Redfield Lumber's got what you need. It was a sign from the heavens.
I'm so sorry, miss.
Sherry rushed out of the manager booth in a blue zip-front pantsuit.
Winch and Barn tried to chat him up, but he said he had to go.
She tripped on a neat stack of just-delivered newspapers. When they fell, they fanned out in a multicolored spray of rectangles.
It's fine.
I put the flyer to the side and kneeled with her to pick them up. He was on the bike?
Buddy's Harley. Yeah.
The papers were slick with wax and full-color ink. They'd fallen front down, so all I saw were weight reduction ads and classifieds. Sherry took a stack and slapped them down to make the edges even.
We see him all the time in these papers, Sherry smiled ruefully. Perks up the whole town.
Meg Birch was on the cover of Hollywood magazine with her soon-to-be ex, looking as if she'd been under the knife 10 too many times.
You should go catch him, Sherry said, blonde hair escaping from her clips. I got this.
Thank you. I got up and walked toward the automatic sliding doors. They slid open, and as I went to step through, I saw the stack that was under the one Sherry had knocked over. I was on the front page with him. I stopped. His face was huge, mid-sentence, eyes half down, unprepared. He looked drunk or angry, not gorgeous. The picture from the middle of the roll a friend would have discarded was the front page of the paper, and I was cut and pasted right behind him. They'd reddened my lips and made it look as though I was about to kiss him.
Daddy Sinclair taps the nanny, right in front of sweet Nicole.
Behind that, in a separate rectangle, was a picture of us on the teacups. The camera angle made it look as though we were in the middle of a lip-locked embrace. I'd imagined a moment like this a few hundred times and recoiled, blocking out the horror of it with other thoughts, other visualizations. Anything but that. Anything but what happened to Blakely.
Can I grab one of these? I asked Sherry.
She stepped over to me, slipping on the papers, writing herself, and looking at what I pointed at.
You're prettier in real life, she said.
Thank you.
I guess he dropped Paula Blount,
she shrugged.
Maybe she'll stop harping on it now.
I think she dumped him. Sherry let out a pfft as if I was talking crazy, then handed me a paper.
Go ahead, take it.
I reached into my purse to pay for it, but she waved away the idea.
Just take it for helping me clean up.
I thanked her again and tucked the paper under my arm. Then I picked up the lumber flyer. The parking lot was dark and empty. There wasn't a soul around, but I felt eyes on me. People were going to see me. They'd know where I was and when. I'd never felt so exposed. Not since I was caught in the back seat of a car with a boy from school and everyone knew. Not since the thoughts of my classmates were written all over their faces. I was angry at Brad, but not really. I was angry at the world. I was angry at myself for dancing on the edges of celebrity. What else did I expect? I hurried into the car, slammed the door, and locked it quickly. Nothing could protect me, and it was my own fault.
This is just a feeling. You're safe. No one is here.
Would I ever believe this again? I was of two minds. I wanted Brad. I'd feel safe with him. Yet he was the cause of my feelings of vulnerability. My mouth had gone dry and my breath had gotten hard and shallow. I breathed in through my nose and out my mouth 5 times. It didn't help. I put the light on so I could find the bottle of water in my purse and saw my reflection in the glass. Blakely talked about changing her face. Would I have to? I took a deep breath and looked at the paper in the car's dome light. There I was, far from home, staring at my worst nightmare. They didn't know what was between me and Brad. They didn't know about the late nights talking with Nicole between us, or how we shared love for one little girl. They didn't know I loved him. Not the shell of a man they'd photographed, but the real man. Where was he in the picture? Nowhere. He wasn't on the page at all. Neither was I. My armor was all the things the camera couldn't see. Chapter 64. Kara. Redfield Lumber squatted on the main road behind a huge parking lot, beige with green doors and letters, daylight bright under floods, and closed, dark inside, without a sign of life. But he was here. I knew it. This building was the storage space for his greatest fears. The traffic light flicked to green, as if anyone wanted to leave the lot at that hour. I got back in the car and went down the side road. I turned left onto a narrow road I could barely see in the dark. The car bumped on the scrappy asphalt. Trees and bushes encroached on each side. The road opened into a small, well-lit lot behind the lumberyard. Brad was stretched across the concrete floor in front of the loading dock's roll-up door. The Harley was parked by the dumpster, and when he turned his head to see who was coming, he was still the most beautiful man in a 10-galaxy radius. I grabbed the tabloid off the dash and got out.
"I see that thing in your hand," he said, looking back up at the roof of the dock. His fingers dangled a bottle of iced tea off the side of the loading dock. "You were already mad before you found it."
"I wasn't mad."
"Yes, you were."
I hoisted myself onto the dock, sitting by his head.
"Bullshit," I said. "You saw Paula's box and flipped out. You didn't give me a chance to say or feel anything."
I put my face directly over his. Was he drunk? His eyes were clear. He wasn't slurring or spitting. Maybe the iced tea bottle just had iced tea in it. I put the tabloid on his chest.
"I cannot believe how fast they got this to press," he said, looking at it quickly before sitting up to open it. "It's going to take me 15 minutes to read it. Give me the log line."
"You're fucking me because you're confused. I'm a whore. Nicole is rotten and spoiled already." He didn't react right away, just let the floodlight wash the color out of his eyes. Like a shot, he straightened himself and let the velocity push him to the ground. He spread the paper over the hood of his dad's car. The pictures were crystal clear in the floodlight. I hopped onto the ground with him. He pointed to my photo so hard the hood under the picture made a hollow sound.
"You look beautiful in this one."
"Brad," I crossed my arms. I hated seeing myself in print. Hated him looking at this flattened version of me. I felt out of control.
"And this one, too. A little blurry, but..."
I snapped the papers aside. I couldn't bear it. "Stop!"
"I can't read what they're saying about you," he shouted. "I don't know what they said about my daughter. I want to choke someone, and I have to calm down to read this fucking shit. And now you know I'm stunted. Developmentally delayed. Re-fucking-tarded. Yes, I was called retarded. Now you know. And it fucking kills me that on this day, when this happens," he indicated the paper, "this is the day you find out Paula's been reading to me like a kindergarten teacher my whole career. I can't even be mad about what they said because I'm too upset to read it."
He grabbed the pages, ripping and pulling them apart. I took his hands in mine to calm him down. "Let them go, please," I said. But he held them firm, and I held his hands just as tightly.
"I'm not stupid," he said. "He said, my father's boss said he'd do me a favor. He'd take me on full-time after junior year. It was his way of giving back, paying it forward,
hiring the retard.
You know you're not, I said, avoiding the word that had hurt him. You finished high school, went to college for acting.
With a special dispensation for talented idiots.
You know you've proven them all wrong.
But what did I prove to you?
He loosened his grip on the paper, and I took it. You've proven you're a little crazy, I said, opening the dumpster. I threw the crumpled tabloid in it and slammed it down. A page escaped. I snapped it up. You're a passionate guy, and you care what people think. I went to put the loose page in the garbage, but he took it from me.
This isn't what you wanted.
It's not. I hate it. It makes me uncomfortable in my own skin. My parents taught me to protect my security clearance. Can you believe that? They drilled it from the minute I could speak. Protect yourself. So this? This hurts me in places I forgot about because they don't matter anymore.
You can't be with me and have security clearance.
I laughed. My clearance hadn't mattered for so long, and here I was talking about it. We're always children, I said. Everything we do, everything we love, hate, fear, it's all the child in us reacting to our adult problems. No, it doesn't make a difference if people see me in the paper. Not really. But it scares me because it made my parents mad. It scares me because I'm afraid I'll lose someone close to me the way I lost them. When do we get to decide what matters to us, not our parents?
When you find out, let me know.
As long as I have you, it's all right. I put my hand on his chest. Do I have you? He took my wrist and brought it to his lips, kissing the tender inside.
How could you want such a fuck-up?
I don't, I said. He looked at me with surprise, and I let it hang there. I don't want a fuck-up. I want you. He snapped open the tabloid and held it up.
This is what you want.
What is that even? I don't know those people. I reached for it to take it away, but he held the paper out of my range and took me by the waist with the other hand, pulling me close.
You're going to make me crazy about you, he said.
I have that effect on people. He kissed me long and hard. He tasted like cold water and chips. While we were still locked, I reached for the paper, and he held it away. We laughed, kissed, and fought for the paper at the same time. Finally, he took his lips off mine and held me at his side. We looked at the picture together. He inspected it closely. I didn't know what he was seeing.
It's all little dots, he said.
Yeah, you're not that handsome in dots. I put my hand on it and pushed it down. He crunched it up.
You're a sexpot in dots, he said. But in real life?
He tossed the last of the paper away.
You're still a sexpot, but more. You turned this bombshell from 6 years ago into a family. You're a magician, do you know? I wasn't ready for that little girl, and now I am. I can still be me and have a family. I'm never going to read this article, but I bet there's nothing in here about what you mean to me.
You're probably right, I said. I took the paper and threw it away, letting the lid of the dumpster land with a slap.
This town, those kids, my fucking family, Brad said. That house I grew up in. I feel right when I'm here. All that stuff I was doing, the parties, the women, was because I didn't feel right. And you make me feel right. And I know that means you and I are going to be on the cover of magazines, but I want you to tell me you can live with it. Tell me you don't care. Say you'll deal with everything they say.
I only care about you. He pulled me to him.
Well, Kara Dumont, people are going to think you don't have a heart of ice.
I don't care what people think.
I do.
His palm cupped my face.
I want everyone to know what kind of person you are.
I thought he was going to kiss me, but he stopped himself an inch away.
Except in bed. That dirty little mouth is my private business.
Then kiss it, I said. Just kiss it. His kiss was defined by what he didn't do. He didn't crash into me or devour me. He appreciated me with that kiss. He brushed his lips against mine as if he valued every place they met. The entirety of what he wanted to say was in that kiss. His tongue flicked against mine, and I drew it in, opening my mouth for it. He pushed me against the car, and in a burst, my body burned for him. He breathed through his teeth, pinning my arms to the passenger window.
I want to fuck you right here, teacup.
The engraved invitation's in the mail. I raised my leg over his waist and he tucked his hand behind my knee. It says, your dick is cordially invited to come inside. He laughed, but not for long, because the hand that was behind my knee trailed over my thigh and went right under my underpants. We both gasped at the same time. I was wetter than I thought, reactive to his touch. I felt as if lightning had struck where he moved.
I can't fuck you fast enough,
he said, yanking at my underpants. I got them down, pulling a leg out while he got his fly open. Go. I got my leg around his waist again. Take it. Take it hard. I barely had the last word out before he took my breath away, entering me in two fast strokes. He pushed forward, and I wrapped my legs around him, digging my fingers in his hair. Sometimes, not very often, but sometimes I looked at him and couldn't believe he wanted me even once. Sometimes he was even more gorgeous than a human should have been allowed to be. Sometimes I felt broken and unwanted, and his desire didn't match how I felt about myself. This wasn't one of those times. He was as beautiful as ever, but starkly human, flawed beyond belief, emotional and broken. He needed me to fill his empty places, and in letting me do that, he filled mine. My heart almost spoke through my lips, but he moaned in my ear first. I thought he'd give me pure filth, but his heart was doing its own speaking.
I never, Kara, I never wanted a woman like this before.
He kissed my neck, fucking me standing, and I couldn't hear myself think past the roar of emotion and pleasure.
I just want to get inside you,
he said, lip to lip, before he rammed into me again with his dick wedged between my legs and his tongue in my mouth. I felt as if I was getting fucked on both ends, fast and hard, as deep inside me as possible. Never. I'd never been fucked like this. My lungs emptied when I cried out. His tongue was still in my mouth when I came. He held me up when my legs stiffened and my back curved like a cat's. He sped up his motions, hitting my center over and over. I pulled away from his mouth and gulped air in his rhythm.
Coming inside you,
he grunted, then got just a little deeper inside me and whispered,
Kara, 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 I'm sorry, Kara.
I thought he was apologizing for what he'd done in the past, but he wasn't. He was apologizing for what he would do in the future.
Chapter 65. Brad. Kara's phone came in the mail with a dead battery. She plugged it into the outlet by the toaster and didn't say a thing. Kara? Yeah? The phone? It'll take just a couple of hours to charge. I left it in the hotel. I cleared my throat because she wasn't getting what I was trying to say. On purpose.
Why?
The pictures. If you were connected, you'd see them. It was fucked up. Very fucked up. I'm sorry. Fists on hips, she leaned on one foot.
Is there anything else you need to tell me?
Mom and Nicole came in before I had to answer. But yes, I had more things to tell Kara. One thing. The thing I'd forgotten because I was preoccupied with an airplane bathroom blowjob. But there's only so much a guy can do. Only so much a girl can hear. I was getting to it, I swore it. But not now. Just not now. Before I'd gone to the kitchen to discover the box of dyslexia books, Paula had gone over the details of my youthful stupidity in fine detail, sending me a letter from Brenda Garcia's lawyer 5 years before. It took me an hour to decipher words that seemed created just to confuse my scrambled egg brain.
Mr. Sinclair, you have been named the father of baby Garcia. The mother, Brenda Garcia, would like to offer you the opportunity to take a DNA test to prove paternity. Should the test prove positive, you will be held responsible for child support and have the right to visitation as set out in family court. You also have the opportunity to decline paternity filings, and in doing so, you understand you relinquish any and all parental rights, including visitation rights to the child, in perpetuity. Sincerely, Carlina Cruz, Esquire. There had been a voluntary relinquishment form. I'd signed it with my big, stupid signature. Couldn't even pretend to deny it. So I'd known. But I barely read the thing because I was distracted, and Paula had just told me the deal in a sentence. Something on the order of, you knocked up some girl, and if you don't want to have your wages garnished forever, just sign here. That sounded ridiculous, even in my own head. Maybe I remembered it that way, but blaming Paula wasn't going to make me look like a saint. Not to Kara. She was the only woman I wanted to canonize me. With Nicole upstairs with Kara, I tried to tell myself the story in a way that would excuse me, but nothing worked. I'd given her up. I'd said no to being her father, then forgotten about her before the plane even landed. I made millions while her mother had to keep her in a cabinet at Coffee Chain when she couldn't get a sitter. Who does that? What kind of person? Amazing how I could decide not to think about something for so long. Maybe I'd put it out of my mind because I'd signed 100 different pieces of paper I couldn't understand, and that was just another in the pile. Or maybe I didn't want to see the letter for what it was. A statement about my fitness as a father and human being. I'd been so worthless that Brenda Garcia would rather be a single mom than let me claim her daughter. Ken answered the phone. Hello? He sounded as if he'd swallowed a ball of yarn. Dude, are you in bed? I asked from the porch. The block was dark, no street lights, no floodlights on front porches. L.A. was never this dark. It's midnight there. I'm in bed, like an adult. You knew about Nicole. You and Paula. You had me sign papers on the way to shoot Everly. Yeah, you got away lucky for 5 years. You couldn't remind me? My heels rocked the porch swing. The hooks in the ceiling groaned, same as they did when I was 12. For what? So you could blab to the press that you signed her off? You were on the edge of becoming something or nothing. And that edge? About as thin as net returns. We decided to control the damage. We? Paula, who do you think? Jesus. Don't Jesus me. He seemed more awake. I thought I heard the sound of a refrigerator opening and closing. She would have killed any chance you had. You would have moved all the way to Los Angeles to become an out-of-wedlock father. You could have stayed in buttfuck Alabama and done that. Arkansas. Whatever, it wouldn't matter because mother and daughter would be in Los Angeles and you wouldn't be able to move home. You would have been stuck in Hollywood, worse than nothing, with baggage, no time, no energy, nothing. Brenda Garcia was a saint. She had it under control. How much did you pay her? You paid her 50 grand, on loan. I've been taking it out slowly as expenses, interest-free. You're welcome. 50 fucking grand? The amount seemed inconsequential to the responsibility of taking care of Nicole. 50 large. She was thrilled. She paid off her debts and got a bigger apartment. I was playing the part of father. All the backstory had been taken care of. I was a fraud, going through the motions while other people took care of the props. Is there anything else I need to know? I asked. That's the last of it. You're writing the rest of this story on your own. I didn't know if I hung up first or if he did. I looked at the sky and asked Brenda Garcia for forgiveness. I asked her dimples, her smile, her cheap apartment, her lousy paying job, her discipline, and her little girl. All the things I knew about her. I'd been stingy with her, and the fact that Ken and Paula had conspired to keep it under wraps was irrelevant. They'd done me the favor they knew I'd want. The living room was dark. I could hear my father snoring upstairs. My mother had learned to sleep through it, and a few years of public drunkenness, and through his loyalty to the lumberyard, and letting the back of the house go to termites before he did anything about it. She'd forgiven him plenty, but she'd never had to forgive anything like this. He'd never denied his own children. Before Nicole, before Kara, before I became a man, That wouldn't have meant anything to me, but now it did. And I didn't know how to make it right.
Chapter 66, Kara. We were leaving for Thailand right from Arkansas. I would be Nicole's studio teacher and nanny, but she and I would return home when school started. When Brad joined us in L.A. to do the green screening, we would transition into our new version of normal, whatever that was.
"Can I wear my twinkling shoes?"
she still asked, even though we never said no. "Yes," I said to Nicole. "You can wear your twinkling shoes. Now just put them on, please." I'd plugged my phone in that morning. It started dinging, bleeping, vibrating when I turned it on, as 3 days' worth of messages came in. Nicole sat right on the kitchen floor and got her shoes on. She could tie them herself, but it took forever. I scanned my screen, answered messages, scanned again. Laura at Westside. 4 emails and 3 texts. 1 long voice message. Jobs. Texted back to postpone until I got back from Thailand. Blakely. Texts and voicemails. Her callback had gone well. She got a second callback. Then her happiness turned to concern. "Where are you, Kara? Are you okay?" Quick text back of congratulations, comfort, and a goodbye.
"Miss Kara!"
Nicole yanked my shirt and pointed her toe. "Wow," I said. "That's a perfect bow." She smiled coyly. "Double knot." "The car's outside," Susan called from the front. Milton picked up 2 suitcases and Brad bounded down from the stairway to take them from him. We were going to Memphis International Airport, 1 hour and change away, too far for his parents to drive. Irma picked up Nicole and kissed her cheek. They extended loving affections while I scrolled through. Junk. Spam. I thought I should call Laura back and explain about Brad and how it wouldn't happen ever again. Maybe meet up when I got back. And Paula had texted, as if she hadn't caused enough trouble.
"Come on, Miss Kara," Nicole called out.
Susan tapped my shoulder. "Goodbye, Kara," she said, hugging me. "I hope you come back." I didn't know what to say. I didn't want to hope with her because I'd committed myself, and hoping meant I thought we could fail. I didn't feel that anymore. "I will," I said, taking her by both shoulders. "We won't be strangers, I promise."
"Good."
Irma crouched down to hug Nicole. She picked the girl up and swung her. I wrapped my arms around both of them.
"Bradley,"
his father yelled from the other room.
"Let's get a move on."
He came into the kitchen before he was finished with his sentence.
"Like middle school all over again. Ah, sheesh, now what are the women doing? All this hugging. Where are we, California? Get in the car before you all turn us into hippies."
I hugged him, and despite his fear of hippiedom, he hugged me back.
"Thank you," he said into my ear. "You take good care of my family. Thank you."
"I love them," I said without thinking. Brad was right behind me. He draped his arm over my shoulder when I pulled away from his dad.
"Hands off my girl."
Milton put his palms up, all 8 fingers spread in surrender.
"Out," his mom shooed us. "The front door's wide open. We're going to be overrun with bugs in here."
We piled into the limo, which had been sent all the way from Fayetteville. Irma stood at the porch steps, Susan next to her. The driver held the door open for Brad. He put his arm around his mother, and she broke out in tears. Real, honest tears.
"Why is Grandma crying?" Nicole asked suspiciously. "What's Daddy doing to her?"
"She's sad he's leaving."
"Grandma!"
Nicole called out. Irma wiped her eyes and faced the open limo door.
"Come to the airport with us."
"Oh, I can't have him drive all the way back."
"Sure you can," Brad said. "We have 1 hour in the lounge to kill. You can kill it with us."
"Need a ticket to get into the lounge."
"I'll get you a ticket. Go get your ID and come on."
"The expense," Irma protested.
"I'll get it," Susan said, running into the house.
"Come on, Grandma."
Nicole patted the seat next to her. Brad pushed her to the back of the car.
"No one says no to my daughter." He made $3 million on his last movie, Melton said. He can buy another limo ride. Go with them. I gotta clean up the mess around here. It's like an army ran through the house.
Irma was not impressed. You never cleaned a thing in your life, Melton Sinclair.
I will if you get.
Seeing she had everyone's approval, Irma Sinclair got into the back of the limo, next to me. Brad shook his hands with his dad and Buddy, then slid in next to Nicole. Susan came back with Irma's purse. The door closed, and we were off to Thailand.
Chapter 67, Brad. I played with Nicole on the limo ride to the airport. She kneeled on the floor and used the seat as a table, drawing herself and her new school, her impressions of a long airplane ride, the pony I was apparently getting her, and her name. The whole name. Nicole Garcia Sinclair. All the letters facing the right direction, in order, right side up. We hadn't legally changed it, but she was telling me something. I picked up the paper and held it up. Hey, Kara, I said. These letters are all in the right place, right? She didn't answer. She was looking at her phone. A plane screamed in the sky above. We were almost at the airport.
Let me see, Mom said, taking the page. They're perfect.
Nicole smiled and put her head down to make more letters, and Kara slid her hand over the glass of her phone, eyes wide, chin jutting and tender at the same time, as if she wanted to weep but couldn't. Teacup? She didn't answer. She put two fingers on the glass and spread them to make an image bigger. I swallowed, but nothing went down. Mom and Nicole chattered about the drawings. I could barely hear them through the scream of Kara's concentration. She put her phone in her lap and looked out the window as Arkansas farmland whooshed by. Did she know? Was it the truth? A lie? Had Paula embellished? Made it sound worse? How could it actually be worse? I texted her. Teacup? What's wrong? Her phone dinged. She looked at it, then at me. She put the phone back in her lap and looked out the window. Okay, this wasn't working. I wasn't sitting there wondering what the fuck was wrong with her. I didn't do that. I didn't sit and wait for things to happen. If she was going to be mad, she was going to do it now. I rapped on the driver's window. It slid down. Pull over here, would you? Sure thing.
What's happening, Daddy?
I looked at Kara when I spoke. Miss Kara and I have to make a pit stop. Nicole went up like a shot, peering out the window.
Can we get a hot dog? There's not a rest stop in sight, Brad,
Mom said. Not that kind of pit stop. Gravel crunched under the tires, and the limo came to a stop. A car blew by so fast the limo jolted. I didn't wait for the driver to open the door. I yanked the handle and went to the side of the heat-baked road. Kara didn't follow. I leaned into the car. Her phone was still sandwiched between her hands, which were folded between her legs as if she wanted to protect her device or shield herself from the information on it. You coming? I said. Or do I have to carry you? In the sunlight, her eyes were bluer. Less like the deep ocean and more like the color of running seawater. Maybe we should discuss this in front of Nicole, I suggested. I stepped out of the way and finally she followed. Give us a minute, I said to my mother, whose look of disapproval was cut off when I closed the door. I decided as I scanned for Kara and found her leaning on the back of the limo with her arms crossed that I wasn't going to pretend this could be about anything else. It couldn't be. And if it was, I was just going to bring it up anyway. I stood across from Kara and crossed my arms so we were a matched set. Can you hear me? I asked. Yeah. She handed me her phone. I immediately recognized the documents I'd signed, refusing my parental rights, and Paula's name at the top of the screen. I handed it back. I don't want to talk about it yet. I'm confused. Yeah, I wasn't confused. I was real clear. I was going to man up, and she was going to deal with my apology. She was better off without me. Which wasn't exactly what I was planning to say, but that was what came out. The truth. How convenient, golden boy. She finally looked at me. The wind blew the hair off her face, and it trailed behind her like a black flag. The opposite of surrender. Everything just goes your way. How was I supposed to answer that? I couldn't even tell if she was insulting me or giving me a shot in the arm for being lucky.
I wonder sometimes, She moved a rock with the tip of her shoe. Am I just the last thing that you fell into? Get a daughter and find her a mother right after? Perfect. Home run. Brad Sinclair steps in shit again. Rejects his kid. No consequences. Parties like a teenager for years. No consequences. Suddenly a single dad? Easy. Sinclair doesn't miss a beat. Lies about knowing he had a daughter? What's going to be the consequence? I bristled from her summary of my life. She knew damn well it wasn't that easy. You don't have to worry about my consequences. You're not God. Her head shot up, as if pulled up by shock. She blazed. Even in the Arkansas sun, her anger was the hottest thing for miles. No, I'm not. God forgives. I can only stand so much lying. I'm not a saint. I'm a human, and so flawed. She looked away for a second, trying to gather her emotions. I put a hand to her face, and she slapped it away. I've copped to every mistake I ever made, and you just make a show of it. You rejected her. You left her. I was living in a studio in Silver Lake. For how long? A year? I was on a trajectory at that point. One low-paying, SAG-waivered critical darling in the can, shooting another with a major director and a summer tentpole scheduled. Significant money hadn't started rolling in and wouldn't for another year, but my path was lit like a runway. I didn't even remember signing it. I was handed a paper in the middle of a flight. Anything else on the list of excuses? You know what? Fuck her. She was betraying me right there, stabbing me in the back with my own decisions. You know what, lady? I'm trying my best. I took this on. I didn't try and get out of it. I've had to change my life all around for Nicole, and I'm glad I did, but I don't need the self-righteous judgment from you. I don't need to look over my shoulder every second because you might not approve. Here's the deal. I'm in the paper all the time. I'm a dude. I do dude things. Deal with it. And I didn't tell anyone I can barely read. That would have ended me before I started. And I'm not admitting it now. I'm not taking that risk. Deal with it. And the last thing you can deal with is that I have a past, just like you, and I made decisions in the past you're not going to like. Well, that felt good. Real good. Laid it out right there. I didn't know what I expected from her after that, but I held on to that good got shit off my chest feeling because the goodness of it was about to disappear. Nothing I said was deniable. I knew I was right on paper, but life wasn't on paper. Life was on the side of the road in Arkansas on the way to Thailand with my daughter and a woman I needed. I'm disappointed, she said, the wind blowing hair over her face. I'm disappointed in myself for trusting you. I thought you were honest. I don't even know who you are. How could I tell her she did? When we were alone with Nicole in the dark, I was complete. She had to know who I was. She had to see me because I'd opened myself to her. I hadn't opened up to anyone, and I realized how much I needed her to see that. To know that she stood inside that open door of my heart. I loved her. I needed her. She couldn't turn her back on me over this. I wouldn't allow it. The minivan came down the highway, slowed. The side door slid open, and two girls, no older than 12, waved and called out, holding up their camera phones. Brad Sinclair! I waved, but I wanted them to go away. My first reaction was to flip them two birdies, but they were too young. So I turned my back on them, and when I faced Kara again, my defenses were up. This is what I am, I said. I'm not deep. I'm just trying to hold this job together. She shook her head ever so subtly. The minivan driver got the hint and sped away as the girls squealed. Kara and I? We were just locked in a wordless battle. I didn't know what was on her mind. I couldn't read past the anger. I couldn't look away. Couldn't move. The stillness of our bodies was a lie in my case. My mind was on fire. Should I apologize? Should I say it was a mistake? I could grovel and spend hours dismissing the decision as the worst yet in a series of bad decisions. I could beg and plead for the case of love. But I wasn't going to. I'd done what I had to do, and I didn't lie about it. I just kind of more or less chose not to think about it. The cord between us snapped when the car door opened.
Daddy?
Nicole stood in the dirt with her legs crossed.
Yeah? I have to pee. Can you make it 15 minutes?
Kara asked.
I think so.
Let's roll, I said, happy to be away from that shitty scene at the side of the road. I had no idea it would get worse. I didn't even think it was possible.
Chapter 68. Kara. Nicole made it. What a kid. The best kind of kid. The kind of kid you met in a bathroom and said goodbye to in a bathroom. The kind of kid you loved face to face and had to leave when her father's assistant sent you screenshots of documents denying he wanted a child. I could have forgiven him. I don't know how, but maybe if he'd admitted it. He didn't need to apologize, but pretending those documents didn't exist and getting self-righteous about them made me want to hit him over the head. I was going to run away instead. It took me the entire ride to the airport and the 7 minutes to the first-class VIP lounge to absorb how angry I was. I couldn't handle this relationship. I couldn't handle Brad Sinclair. I couldn't handle his fame or his dishonesty. I couldn't trust him. Today it was lies about rejecting his daughter. Tomorrow, who knew? How deep was I going?